Welcome back, folks, to our Lightfare 2019 series, Greg.
We're having fun out here live, doing some action, podcast, getting after it.
So this episode of the show is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Go to KeystoneTech.com, Greggy. KeystoneTech.com.
What do you call them?
I call them the retrofit king, brother.
That's what they are. If you've got a current fixture, which everybody does, retrofit it, Keystone's got the product for you. Cover everything from tubes to bulbs to lamps to whatever you want to call
them. They're getting into a little bit of light fixtures these days as
fixtures,
well.
Fixtures, yep.
My favorite, personal favorite, is Sign Hero. So just Google Sign Hero Keystone and it'll come up. That's KeystoneTech.com, baby. And of course, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, Greg.
That's where we met.
Of which you're a member.
I'm a member, you are too.
Woo! So go to NAALD.org. Don't be afraid to get some education from LS1 to LS2. And of course, I think that's it for sponsors, KeystoneTech.com and NAILD.org. We are here today with Michael Davidson and Jamie Britnell of Synapse. Extend your senses. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit about, so we were talking to Paul from LDNA Magazine.
Yes.
And he said, you know, I said, what's the theme of Lightfare this year? What are you taking away from it? Is it health effects, or is it IoT, or is it connected lighting? They say connected lighting. Obviously, you guys are here to talk about connected lighting.
Yes, sir.
What do you want to tell us? What don't we know about it that we should know? Let's start with that.
It's the future.
Okay. Why?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, but you know, basically, you always talk about the naked ape. And so basically, the light switch has been the only control that people have had.
Sure.
So you start looking at ways to get better value to the customers. You know, so you're looking at saving energy. I mean, there's always a big debate how much you save. It could be 2% or it could be like 90%, depending on, you know, the usage there. But also there's other things you can bring to the party. Is there's a lot of code stuff going on, Title 24, Washington State, Oregon. And I think that stuff will start drifting across the country as you see with time. So you can't meet those codes, or you can't meet DLC without connected lighting.
Do you think code will drive it, or do you think people's preference will drive it?
I think code initially will drive it, but I think eventually when they start seeing what's available, and it's kind of like when you do a retrofit, sometimes if you talk about a parking lot, we're a rounding error. There's $20,000 that goes into control, and $500,000 goes into everything else. So why not put that in there? And plus, what about 10 years from now? You guys, you know, you do an install somewhere in high bays or something, they go like, why don't you tell us about this control stuff? Because we want to do some extra things. So it's kind of future-proofing. In the past, it was too expensive. When you had to pay as much for the controls as you did for the luminaire, wasn't a good, you know, business case. But now with the cost coming down, it's a fraction of the price of the luminaire. It's all of a sudden something you might want to talk about putting in there. But, you know, you also need to think about where's that customer going? And that's the hard part, is predicting the future. I mean, we see, you know, a lot of our installations are kind of forward-thinking people. You know, they want
early
to...
Early adopters always get burned. That's, you know, the other thing, too, is like, one of the words that's been forbidden on my show is human-centric lighting. I think that's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said, right?
Now, what does that mean?
The second thing, it doesn't mean anything. It's stupid. The second thing I might ban is future-proof. I hate that word. Uh-huh. My house is future-proof 2005, right?
Well.
Yeah, so everything works with an old iPod.
Yeah.
Oh, it's future-proofed up the wazoo, man, as long as Apple still, they don't run that software anymore.
Well, let's call it controls ready.
Controls ready, future-proof, I mean... Here's my thing. I'm always suspicious of any business that tells me that they need codes in order for people to adopt it.
Uh-huh.
That tells me that there's no value proposition. Right? I'm excited about the new codes that are going to come out to drive our business. I kind of think you don't have a business model. I saw some pretty exciting stuff on that sign out front there.
Yeah.
I talked about addressability, knowing if fixtures are burned out. Tell me a little bit about that, because that interests me.
Yeah, I think there's you know, if you look at the history of controls, especially the fast, I'm talking about connected lighting or intelligent controls over the past 5 to 10 years, we started out trying to make an argument on ROI alone, right? Yeah. Hey, we're going to save 46% or 97% or 2%. And honestly, that's my opinion. That's a bad argument to make. we're not able to make that argument consistently across all different kinds of customers with very different levels of expertise in applying the type of energy saving strategy that you need to be able to meet some of these broad and huge numbers that they're saying that you get. And then we started kind of saying, hey, well, this code's going to drive it. And that's absolutely true. We're seeing some code driving the adoption of it, but you're right. There needs to be a different piece of the value proposition that we're delivering to the customer beyond just the ROI or beyond just the energy codes and things like that. The other dynamic that we're seeing here is that the lighting industry itself, I think, is in a state of flux. Right? We're seeing all... slightly. You're seeing all the big guys. Yeah, you know, all sure. The big guys. Look at the financial statements on a lot of these guys, right? We're partners with a lot of them. We're trying to help them move beyond just basic lighting side of it. There's a business model change, I think, that's coming to a lot of these folks. That the business model that they had in the past is not necessarily working. You look at the financial statements and see that.
You mean selling replacement light bulbs? It's not a good business.
Exactly. Right. So whether it's services or software pieces or some other type of value beyond the light side of it, you're seeing that phrase show up in a lot of different publicly traded companies and things like that in terms of their annual reports and those things. The fundamental thing about whether you call it connected lighting or intelligent lighting or you get on the IoT hype, the bandwagon, what you really got to do is you got to solve real problems at the customer side.
So my problem is I'm always falling off the wagon.
Right.
With the IoT side of things, you guys are talking about various functionalities on your marketing.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Right. So I mean, let's go through the what were they? There was addressability to see if the fixture is working properly.
Right.
Or not. So how much energy it's consuming in real time? We're talking about that too.
Yep. Yeah.
What else is on that board out there?
There are some things beyond just the lighting. So the things related to lighting.
I'm talking about concepts of value. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Okay, so let's list them.
So things like telemetry data within the driver itself. How many hours? Yeah. Things like how many hours it's been running.
Okay. Sure.
When it was installed, or what the commissioning date was. Those are all concepts that can exist inside the fixture now that may provide additional value, maybe to the end user, but really to the fixture manufacturer. Understand maybe warranty claims, or replacement pieces, things like that. Provide them additional insight into what's going on inside the fixture. For example, was this fixture operating in a condition that might have been outside its operating environment?
I don't want to hear about how manufacturers can spy on the use of their products.
Right,
not that exciting.
Sure, right, yeah.
You know what I mean? As someone who sells light bulbs to end users. I want to know about this, how much energy the fixture uses. Mm-hmm. How do you know that?
So there's within the drivers themselves these days, they're doing power monitoring in the driver. So you can query that driver and understand what amount of energy is consumed over a period of time, what the real power
is. How do you connect to that driver?
So inside the driver itself, there's a digital interface between the controller and the LED driver. It's all based on DALI 2. Okay. Is one of the specs driven by the DIIA. Okay. And it's an intra-communication protocol or bus inside that fixture.
And how is it communicated? Bluetooth, Wi-Fi?
It's a physical connection, a wired connection between the controller.
Cat5 cable or something like that?
No, just two wires.
Yeah, just two wires. It's on the board itself. So there's
and
a physical...
communicating with your software?
Exactly.
And how is it communicating? Wirelessly?
Yeah, once we query the LED driver that's inside the fixture...
Sure.
And we have that data inside the controller, then we're going to communicate that wirelessly back to our gateway. And that gateway can do some information.
How wireless, like Wi-Fi?
Our technology is 802.15.4.
Okay.
It's a Zigbee-like protocol. Okay. We don't use full Zigbee, but it's an easy way to categorize it. And then that'll go to the gateway. And the gateway can provide some level of smarts on that, some intelligence, things like schedules and zones. But the real power of that is aggregating that up in the cloud. So we push that data northbound up into a cloud interface to aggregate things like power data for the entire facility, for each individual zone or things like that.
And you're able to do sub-metering with this software as well?
That's right. So
revenue grade?
Within...
Utility.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you already have a meter in the building.
Sure.
That's telling you what you're doing, but you'd really like to know how much energy am I using on this production line.
Sure. Right?
Or how much energy am I going to use in the
parking lot. I've been talking about that for a long time in my show, that one of the things that people are not considering, one of the most important inputs in manufacturing is electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you drop gas prices 5%, and people line up around the block to fill up the tank. That blows me away. Mm-hmm. I'm driving home from work, and people are waiting in the gas line. Mm-hmm. Thinking, man, you're going to save $4, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you going to save $10 or something? Are you going to sit there for two? So people will change their behavior when they have the right information.
Right. Correct.
Okay. And so, so if you can give people real and good information about how much a piece of equipment, electricity, a piece of equipment's using, they will change how they use it.
That's right. And so this goes beyond just what energy is being consumed in the light, right? You know, it's one thing to have the, let's say, Department A inside the facility. I've got it in the back corner and it's consuming X number. You know, I have a zone set up with my lighting system. So I know what the lighting energy being consumed in that area is. It's a different thing to also now be able to sensor the equipment in that area and understand what the power consumption of that widget making machine in
the
back corner is.
This is the fastest growth area there is.
That's right.
Never mind the lighting in terms of energy efficiency.
Right.
It's not about saving energy.
It's the inside.
It's about giving people the information they need to save energy.
Correct. And so the benefit from a Synapse standpoint, what we bring to the table is not only do we have a lighting control system that you can use to control those lights and get the energy off the lights, but you can also deploy a sensor interface device in that area and meter that equipment. So understand what energy or what power consumption for that, you know, piece of machinery or the air compressor or whatever, you know, the refrigeration system in that area. So now you can create a zone within that facility and get the data. What is the energy being consumed in that entire zone, that department? What's that department's energy use over a period of time? And compare that to Department B or Department C. What am I doing differently across the facility?
I'm dealing with a guy right now who's got a factory in Toronto. Okay? Just emailed him, right? And he's the CEO. And we've been working on this guy. He still has halides. Mm-hmm. He's got 1,000 watt, 400 watt halides, probably about, I don't know, 300 of them. He's probably the last man in Toronto that's got metal halides.
Yep.
And so we've been trying to close this guy for 15 years. But like, we sell them light bulbs all the time. Mm-hmm. We still sell them halides. So we've had the schedule and all this sort of stuff. Finally, like, I just pick up the finally I got the CEO on the phone. He's like, I don't believe I'm gonna save any energy. I do welding back there, I don't think lighting costs anything. I'm like, okay, so you know, I said, if I can tell you that it does, we can go ahead, sure. So he's in trouble with me because I'm gonna show him that yes, mm-hmm. your lighting uses a lot more energy than you think, and mm-hmm. this is how it's gonna say. The reason why he hasn't changed is not because he's an idiot. In fact, you can make the other argument. The reason he hasn't changed is because he's not an idiot. Mm-hmm. Because nobody's been able to prove to him that he should spend $250,000 on his lighting system.
Right.
So he's not going to do it. Mm-hmm. But you guys need to get that information to people so they can make the right decisions. And that's what's next in lighting. Never mind lighting. It's like, if you know that your welding machine costs you $180,000 a year, are you going to change the way you price your product?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I had a guy that was doing tempering glass. You see the cables with electricity. The cable alone for the machine cost $250,000. Mm-hmm. Okay? He has no idea how much energy that machine has. He only knows that his energy bill every month is over $100,000.
Where can he save? Where can he cut?
Well, I mean, we ended up telling him how much energy his machine mm-hmm. used, so we measured it. But you can't have that information in real time. That's so important to people. Mm-hmm. Electricity is like a mystery. Sorry, I'm going off here.
No, you're so right. We'll do installations, and they have power monitor now, and they can figure out how much they're spending per month. And then their employees are complaining about the lights are too bright. They're like, oh, we'll just dial them back to where they want them. They dial them back, ends up at 80%.
Sure.
Now they're saving, you know, 20% of energy just making the people happy.
Yeah, sure.
So to Michael's point, are you guys seeing people that are doing controls to save energy or doing controls to gather information?
Both.
And what more of?
Probably starting off more energy, but now people are starting to ask, what else can you do? I just came back from a committee meeting for IES, and there's a guy, property manager, saying, hey, I want to do this. You know, I've got all these parking garages, and I have these issues. I want to do this. And it just basically, it's a software change. Something easy enough to do. So we're seeing people who are coming to us with problems, and they want to know how to solve them. How can I go do this?
So, from a control standpoint, then you got. Sorry, I missed my thought here.
Come on, man. I got a point to make.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
So, this is what I've always said. The adoption of IoT is going to depend on when the information becomes valuable enough for the equipment to be deployed by the person who wants the information.
Mm-hmm. You are so right on.
The problem there has to be a compelling problem that it solves,
yeah,
and not just hype. I mean, you see a lot of hype on IoT. This, I mean, how many times do you see gunshot sensors or tracking of equipment or things like that? That's the things that you walk around to any a handful of booths around. You'll see a lot of information about that type of messaging and things like that. But what problems are we actually solving? What are people actually paying for? And you're right. None of this goes off in terms of market acceptability until we're solving real problems at the end user.
Yeah. Well, or yeah. Never mind. Okay. So, or like a good example is this. This is a good thing. So you go up to the average person on the street and you say, "Are you a customer of Facebook or Google?" They'll say, "Yeah, I'm a customer of Google. I use Google every day." "No, son. You're the product." You're what Google and Facebook are selling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You ain't the customer of them. You're their product. You're their trade, right?
Sure.
So is the parking garage, is there a case that the information generated by people using a parking garage could be of such a value in some way that someone would be willing to pay for the equipment to go in there and monitor this?
I don't think so much to monitor the people, but to let the people know that, hey, we know you're here, and eliminate like a cave effect where a lot of times you put a sensor on a light without controls, so you drive along, the light comes on right when you get on top of it, but you look over here, I mean, there's columns and posts. I mean, there could be a bad guy lingering there.
Yeah, but sensors see bad guys too.
Well, I understand. Well, maybe like not that, you stand behind the light.
I've installed lots of parking garage systems that are stupid, and they work great.
Yeah.
What if there's a bad guy? What if it sees a bad guy?
Well, I understand, but I mean, explain that to my wife. When there's darkness all around her, you can do zones.
No. Anybody that puts a sensor on a fixture in a parking garage is an idiot. Okay, that's not how you do a parking garage.
Yeah.
Controls, lighting control system, legacy controls. Okay, so we're going to let the idiots aside.
Yeah.
But you put that's just walking through tick, tick, tick. That's not how it works.
Right.
That's not how it should be done. But what I'm going to say is this. Is there information that's useful? Because if there isn't information that's useful, then we need the controls. Because I can do the energy savings with controls that are not smart.
Right.
I can get the same energy savings.
Well, almost. Not quite, but almost.
Yeah, within 1%
or 10%. Probably about 10 or 15%.
Yeah,
we can do the math. I'll do a spreadsheet for you and send it to you.
All right.
Yeah.
I got paper too.
What I'm saying is, if you could give
people information like, hey, this fixture's burned out.
Yeah.
Go fix fixture number 21A.
Yep.
Or whatever. Now you're starting to talk. Mm-hmm. You guys have that capability yet?
Yes.
So there's the pieces of, yes, there's the fixtures burnout. I can send a notification, get that via email. Let's say that there's somebody, the security person on staff or the maintenance technician, they can get that information today.
Yeah. How about L70 rating? Can they get that measured? Can they say this LED is past its point of light output that it should be?
So, this is the issue with talking to someone that's a technology company and not someone who's a legacy or in the lighting business. I have no idea what L70 means.
That's the rated life of the LED.
Yeah, got you.
When it's lost.
So he knows more about that.
Yeah. So basically all you need is a photo sensor.
Yep.
And we deploy those today in different applications where you need a little bit more resolution. Mm-hmm. They're higher costs, they're $100 versus like 20 or 30, but you can measure the foot candles and you can say, hey, when we started out, we were at so many foot candles and now we're down to like 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of off subject, but on it, it's kind of crazy to think about that. It's like, are people actually going to know when they're at L70? Probably not.
No, they're not.
And are they going to care?
Well, especially if they all dim at the same rate.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's all degrading at the same time.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them to say.
Well, for instance, you go to a school and you do a design forum and they want 50 foot candles on the table. Easy enough, you do it.
Sure.
Boom, you got it. But after 5 or 6 years, do you still have 50 foot candles, or are the kids strained to see it's down to 25?
Well, really what they need to know is how many vertical foot candles they have, because that's actually way more important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The IS and all these guys, they're now developing that. Humans don't walk around like this.
Right. Yeah.
You spend most of the time in a classroom like this.
Yeah.
And most of the time in the space looking at the walls.
Yeah.
Right? Not at the vertical, not at the horizontal space. We got about 5 minutes left.
Please. Yeah. What do you guys see as going back to the question, if we have the biggest obstacle for people to implement controls right now? What do you hear?
Where do we start? So the Michael, I think one of the things you're passionate about is the education side of it. I think there's just general, there's fear of controls, fear of intelligent lighting out there. We may not want to call it fear, but it's, I'm scared. We've been burned in the past. Things just not working right, right? Or not making the same, making promises we can't fulfill, or it's not easy to fulfill. And there's some aspect of the education side of it that I think that is missing in the industry. I think you've worked with some.
Just take a step back real quick before we get into the education part. Is that, you know, right now we're not early adopting type thing. You don't want to be the first one in. There's a lot of bad solutions. Half of our jobs we got the first year were replacing somebody else's stuff that didn't work.
Right. There's whole companies that go around, like, you know, trying to get people's lighting control systems to work.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But going back to education, I think it's people understand what it takes to set up controls. You know, it's hard to get a narrative out of it, like a building owner. What do you want these things to do? I can make it do anything you want, but tell me. So sure. Getting that information, just training, basic controls training. I mean, you guys have a wealth of knowledge on, you know, fluorescents and LEDs, HIDs. And I was part of a NAMCO committee where we created a commissioning controls type of class. It's very basic. You guys could probably take it and pass it, you know, like in 30 minutes. But there's too many people out there, electricians, contractors, that don't have the knowledge base of what is it going to take to go do controls. I mean, what is daylight harvesting? They have no clue. What is a photocell? So I think education is important going forward. Then also, you know, get rid of that fear of controls.
Controls, the controls business.
Yeah.
Aside from the talking about the in-depth deployed controls in real time, has been a failure to launch for the last decade.
Yeah. There's a lot of introspection that the lighting controls business should do on why we were releasing products that didn't work, or why we were releasing products that it was impossible for people to commission.
Yeah,
right.
For sure.
Right. And so. I'm going to toot our own horn a little bit. From a Synapse standpoint, I mentioned this earlier, we're a technology company. I came into this business knowing nothing about lighting. I thought a cobra head fixture was a fixture in the shape of a cobra's head.
It kind of is.
Right, right. But like fangs called. And eyes and everything. That was a joke, right? But no, I mean, I seriously made that. So the way we approached it from the beginning was my background and a lot of engineers that work for us came from the telecommunications industry. We were doing things for a lot of the national carriers. So we saw lighting controls differently. We saw it as a method of communication, not just on-off dim.
See, I think part of the problem is the idea of lighting.
Right.
Like, you're kind of like, it's like, for me, why are we even talking about lighting?
Mm-hmm.
What has it got to do with lighting? Like, what you want right. to accomplish? It doesn't even really have anything to do with lighting. Lighting is just one aspect.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's a carrier for the information that we're right. looking for, the problems we're trying to solve.
Why not the gate, the arm that opens
right.
at the front of the parking
lot? Sure. Exactly.
You know, why is that not included? Mm-hmm. You know, right. So the whole idea of lighting controls, what about just controls that you control your lighting and everything else?
Right.
I think that's some of the problem revolves around that. The other thing is that my concern is, you know, I have an Android, he's got an Android. You've got an iPhone, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
There needs to be, someone needs to win. And there needs to be a language written that everybody then writes into.
I don't know.
That's where I'm at too, is the fear is the proprietary nature of controls right now. You do Synapse, you have to have Synapse, and that's it. You can't convert it to anything else. With a light bulb, you can convert it.
Right.
That's what's scary about controls.
But there's interoperability. I mean, we have dozens of OEMs that embed our product into it. So you can use our radios between their products. There's nothing they're doing. We're focused on Dolly 2 for the intra communications. So we're building an ecosystem with sensors, LED drivers. And so that's interoperability, APIs. So it's another piece, BMS gateways.
I want to challenge that just a little bit on there. And think about, there may be different technologies needed for the environment you're in. Maybe PoE is the right one. Maybe Zigbee is the right one. Maybe LoRa's right. I don't know that it matters at that layer. You said earlier, it's not necessarily about the lighting. So whatever I've got embedded in the fixture, as long as I can do the things I want to do from a lighting standpoint, what do I care? That's all going back to a gateway or some other centralized device. But if I'm trying to solve higher order problems, I really care about getting into that gateway level. So things like IP connectivity or API connectivity down that gateway where I can do other things beyond just on off dim at the light. So choose whatever technology you want at the light, you know, south of the gateway level for the application you're in. Like I said, there are different reasons people choose different technologies for the environment they're in, and some work better than others. I don't know that you will ever get to a this is the right technology for everything, but the idea of interoperability, I think, really applies at the API level, at the gateway and northbound cloud level.
And there's the information and the processing is needed at the edge, though.
Yeah. So that, I mean, you could do that at the gateway level, right? So the gateway, south of the gateway, where you're talking to the fixtures, I can use LoRa, or I can use Zigbee, or I can use Bluetooth mesh, or I can use whatever. I don't really care. As an end user, I don't care what the technology is. I just want my lights to work, yeah, right? And so certain environments may...
I don't know if that's not just what I want.
Okay.
I think there's more. I think that's your problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think you know what those people want from a control perspective. Right. What is a property manager and your ISP? Mm-hmm. What is it like? Let's take it back to the great Peter Drucker. Who is the customer?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Yeah. The customer is the advertiser on Google, not the user.
Right.
Okay, so who is the customer? What does the customer want to buy?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So the controls business in lighting or any kind of a building controls has not answered that question fundamentally.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it goes back to people have a hard time describing exactly what they want.
They want peace of mind.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
So,
like knowing that their lights can do what they want it to do.
Yeah, they don't want the lighting. I mean, in folks we've talked to, especially on the industrial side, maybe some municipalities, is I don't want the lighting control system to get in the way of my day job. I want my lights to work, but I don't care about.
No, you got to hire someone to run the lighting control system.
That's right. Right. So you mentioned about the customer.
Ours is easy. Sales guys commission our stuff. And the only reason we use the sales guys is the chimpanzee was busy that day. Yeah, so we use the sales guys instead. Yeah, so.
Folks, very good. The lighting controls debate will go on. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by
Keystone Technologies.
Go to KEYSTONETECH.com. My personal favorite is Sign Hero. Google Sign Hero, like. On Google, and you're not the customer when you do that. Mm-hmm. You're the product. I'll Google it there. You'll find Keystone, the Retrofit Kings, Light Made Easy, Greg. Thank you for Synapse for inviting us into talking about lighting controls today.
We appreciate it.
And, of course, you listening while you're mowing the lawn right now, when you're out there, like us on Facebook. I don't know. Do we have Facebook? I don't even know if we have Facebook.
Facebook.
Is there a Facebook page? Twitter, LinkedIn, of course, is the heart of Get a Grip on Lighting and all the conversations. So like our stuff on LinkedIn. And, of course, download our podcast. Thank you for listening.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, Lord is there to find you.